Now this is my kind of party. Grab a friend, bring the guns. It's time for the Co-Opticast.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Co-Opticast. This is episode 42 for Sunday, May 2nd, 2010. I'm Mike, back in the host seat for the first time since the birth of my daughter. And I'm a little nervous, frankly.
Don't be nervous. I'll hold your hand. We'll get through it together.
Okay. Well, that's good. It's just been a while since I do this, so... Since I have done this. See, I've already screwed up the English language. Anyway, let's roll right into what you've been playing. So, Nick, why don't you give me a rundown of what you've gone through, because it looks a little more interesting than what I've played.
I played a little bit of Left 4 Dead 2 for our co-op night, checking out the new DLC, and played with some Kat and I teamed up, and we played with some random Xbox Live folks, and I'll tell you what, we met one of the nicest, like, random Xbox Live players that I've ever met. Like, he was just...
He's a plant.
Maybe. I mean, it was... Both of us were like, wow. Like, he was just a generally, like, really nice kid. Was really happy to be playing, like, so... That was nice. Played a little bit of Serious Sam HD, the second encounter. I think it was this morning. Just checking out the new co-op survival mode. Okay, it is the hardest survival mode of any game. If you can survive longer than 2 or 3 minutes, you are a god.
Like, really?
Yeah, it is brutal. But it's fun. It's pretty fun. It's a good, quick thing to kind of jump in, play, and jump out when you have a little time to kill. I've also been playing some of the Halo Reach beta. Probably got about 10 matches in. It's Halo. It's tweaked a little bit. It's a little bit faster. There's a new game mode called Headhunter, which is a blast to play. And basically what it is when you kill somebody, they drop a skull. You have to pick up the skull and take it to one of these like drop zones that are constantly shifting around the map. So you'll see little indicators on the players, like how many skulls they're carrying. So like if you have like 5 or 6 skulls, like everyone's trying to target you and stop you from getting to the thing to cash in. So it makes for some interesting things. Like you might be getting a lot of kills, but you might not necessarily be cashing those kills in. So it's really hectic, and there's a lot of times where I was just kind of like screaming at the TV, like, you know, I was like a foot away from catching in like 5 or 6 skulls, and I'd get capped, and someone would come in, gather up all them, and score. A really interesting thing I learned today with it was if you have 10 skulls and you cash it in, you automatically win the map. It's called a Skullamanjaro. And
so, I hear that you're, like, everybody's HUD points at you as soon as you get 10, though.
I bet. Even if you have 1 skull, it kind of lights up to let you know where that person is. So there's no, like, hiding with the skulls or anything. It's a really, really fun game mode. Graphically, definitely looks a little bit prettier. I'm not so sure about the armor abilities, how much they're going to affect the gameplay. Everyone seems to go towards the jetpacks or the sprint. There is like a cloaking one, and there's also this shield one. But I've been sticking with the sprint and the jetpack mostly. So the other game I've been playing is Alan Wake, which is, if you don't know much about it, a survival horror game on the 360 coming out later this month. And I went into it with a pretty clear conscience, not knowing too much about it, reading up on the hype lately. I mean, it's been in development for 4 or 5 years now, but I'm really enjoying it. It's a very narrative-heavy game, a lot of voiceover, a lot of, like, deep character discovery, I guess is the best way to put it. The game unfolds by, like, there's pages of the novel you wrote scattered throughout that you'll find, and then you can read it, and it kind of, like... It's a very verbose version of what's going on. It's the best way to describe it. And what's interesting is you may read something that hasn't happened yet. So you pick up the pages of the novel of something that might not have happened yet in the game. And I don't know. I don't want to spoil too much. It's really a really interesting way of telling a story. It's very X-Files meets Lost meets... I don't know. It uses a lot of different inspirations in it, and I think it's going to review very well. Like I said, the embargo is May 5th, I believe, on that. So we'll see how the other reviews are. And that's about all I've been playing, really.
That's about all you've been playing, an unreleased awesome game in the Halo Reach beta.
Yeah.
You know a bunch of people are raising their fists to the sky and cursing your name right now,
well,
right?
Well, by the time they listen to this, Halo Reach will be open for all, because that goes live. I don't know if it's going to go live at like midnight tonight or tomorrow morning sometime.
I believe Major Nelson said sometime tomorrow morning Pacific time.
There you go. So when I've been playing Reach, there's been like 5,000 or 6,000 people playing every time. So there's a lot of people in that friends and family early access beta. I had no problems getting a match together.
Yeah, there were interesting opportunities to win codes all over the internet that I saw.
Yeah.
My personal favorite was that Nathan Fillion was handing out codes.
No shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it was Nathan Fillion, I think Felicia Day had a bunch, and, you know, kind of the nerd celebrities were all given beta codes to give away in various fashions.
Interesting.
I think Giant Bomb had the best way of doing it. They implemented a questing system in their website. Gets you to look up obscure stuff and contribute. And it's kind of a neat system, but to win one of their early access beta keys for Reach, they had a bunch of Halo-themed quests, and you had to complete them in a limited amount of time, and everybody that completed them was entered into the drawing for their 25 keys, which I thought was a pretty neat way of doing it.
Yeah, that's a pretty decent thing.
Yeah. As for me, I played a bunch of Left 4 Dead 2, The Passing, and overall, it was pretty fun, but I can't help but feel disappointed that the meetings with the original survivors are very short and kind of at the beginning at the end.
Yeah.
Although I would say that this has some of the best Ellis lines of any campaign ever.
You know what's going to be interesting is when they do the DLC for the original Left 4 Dead, that's the other side of it.
So, yeah.
So that should be pretty interesting to see what they do. Especially if they keep that last mission the same, and you're
how are they gonna do that?
Yeah, I don't know. It could be pretty interesting
because you know someone dies.
Yeah,
and it made me sad. I found their body. I was like, aw.
Yeah,
that's really sad. But I'm gonna take your weapon because it's better than what I'm holding. So Left 4 Dead 2, I don't know, man. The finale of that one was just weak. I mean, it's cool that the other survivors are there and they throw you items and stuff, but it was so easy.
Now, see, heard a lot of people had problems with it. Our group, I think we failed it once and then we got it on the next try. But I've heard a lot of people complain that like it was a lot more difficult than like the mall one, for instance.
I had the exact opposite experience. I played it solo and I played it co-op, and both times on advanced, I had no problems doing it. It was really, really, really fast.
It's all your really zombie easy training. It's finally paid off.
Must be. Maybe it's the fight or flight instinct that I've got going, because you know I live in DC and there's a whole bunch of zombies here. Right. Aside from that, I've been playing Deadly Premonition, which is cheesy and hilarious and awesome, and it only costs $20, so you should buy it. We have a review up for it in the latest Beyond Co-op reviews. And speaking of games in that review list, I also played a little more Final Fantasy 13. I'm stonewalled at a boss that I keep coming within about 2 seconds of beating before I lose.
Ugh.
And I've died like 8 times to it now, so I think I need to actually go and grind a bit before I can continue, which, you know, is not high on my list of things to do right now, so I'm setting that aside for a bit so I can transition to This Week in Co-op. And there's a couple big things this week that arguably the biggest of which is that the next Call of Duty game has been announced and dated. I mean, we have the situation with Infinity Ward going on right now, so Treyarch is stepping up to the plate, and as we all know, they handle the co-op a little bit better than Infinity Ward did. And they have announced Call of Duty Black Ops to be released on the 9th of November of this year. And it does take place in Vietnam, or close to Vietnam, or relating to Vietnam in some way. You can't really tell because the trailer... I don't know. I got a bit of a Metal Gear Solid 3 vibe from it, but...
Well, someone else said they... And I thought this was pretty good. They said that it almost has an Assassin's Creed vibe to it, where there's almost a sci-fi element to it, and it might be a series of flashbacks to different locales.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, it would be completely different for the series, too. And I guess the theory is that you would be one of the Modern Warfare 2 survivors and kind of like flashbacks from... something like that. I don't know. It definitely has this kind of like sci-fi eerie doctor vibe thing going on in the trailer. You can't really tell what's going on because there's so many quick cuts.
All we do know is that we'll feature some form of co-op, but you know, Call of Duty series is huge, and it'll be really interesting to me to see how this sells, because World at War sold pretty well and Modern Warfare 2 sold really well, but now there's all the shenanigans with the series and Infinity Ward itself. So it'll be interesting to see if the strength of the Call of Duty name is enough to keep the sales high, or if gamers are more savvy than we give them credit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think analysts will say that it's not going to have a very big effect on the series, because it is a name thing, and it does kind of take that whole one or two games to catch up. Like, you look at, like, the Guitar Hero series, right? Yeah. Once Harmonix left that, I think Guitar Hero 3 and 4 sold, like, really, really well. Or, I guess, World Tour. And then it kind of tapered off because it kind of caught up. Everyone kind of, you know, got stale, and et cetera, et cetera. So it might kind of be the same thing.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. It sounds way more interesting than Treyarch's last Call of Duty, so hopefully I will get to actually like one of the Treyarch games, because Jim will, you know, hold my head to the fire until I do, I think. Personally, this one was the bigger story for me, but Bungie has struck a deal with the devil. And by the devil, we mean Bobby Kotick. And by Bobby Kotick, we mean Activision. In a move that seemingly came out of nowhere, ill-timed at best, and any number of other negative descriptors, Bungie has revealed that their next IP that they're creating has a 10-year exclusivity deal with Activision as a publisher. Now, oddly enough... The deal says that Bungie retains IP and franchise rights. Like, they retain the rights to it, and after the publishing deal is up, they can do whatever the hell they want with it. Which is kind of funny to me, because that is exactly what the Infinity Ward imbroglio is about. You know, other than everybody leaving and whatnot, the Infinity Ward guys are like, well, we want the rights to Modern Warfare. We don't like what you're doing in Call of Duty, and all this stuff came up. And it's just so funny to me that after all this happened, that the deal that was 9 months in the making, apparently, with Bungie, comes out and Bungie gets the deal that Infinity Ward wanted.
Yeah, it's, in a way, it's kind of sad, you know?
Yeah.
It really is, because... You don't want to see what happened to Infinity Ward happen to any of the developers, despite, you know, whatever you think about them having a big head or any of that kind of stuff. It kind of sucks, because the place is just imploded. I think, the whole thing was over bonuses and owed money and stuff like that, and Activision kept saying, oh, you know, if you're... The people left at Infinity Ward, they're going to get these bonuses. And, I think it was Ben Kuchera from Ars Technica said, it looks like the janitor at Infinity Ward is going to get one hell of a bonus, because he's about the only one left there.
The janitor and the office manager and HR and
yeah,
you know, pretty much everybody who is not the creative talent at the studio.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I guess it's good. It'll be interesting to see what Bungie does. And because Bungie, well, for any of their IPs, you look at Myth, Marathon, obviously Halo, you know, any of their past games, they usually go big. They have a plan for 3, 4, or 5 games with it, and they have a big story arc. They write their big Bible first, you know. They have their mythology set, and then they build on that and build that into games. So we'll see. I mean, basically, the good thing for Bungie here is now they have Activision's marketing muscle and money behind it. It'll be interesting to see how they market it. You know, are they going to say from the makers of Halo or whatnot? We'll see, I guess.
The hopes I have for this deal are that Bungie takes what it's done for, you know, multiplayer gaming. Obviously, you know, Halo changed the game for console first-person shooters, and, you know, the Halo 3's multiplayer system and, you know, what got expanded on ODST and everything is kind of unmatched. I don't feel any other developer has really put together a framework for matchmaking and variety of modes. Like, there are other multiplayer shooters that are probably better games overall, but the sense of community that Bungie harbors around all these games is they stand. I believe they stand alone. I don't think anyone comes close to them. And since not being tied to Microsoft pretty much means that their new IP will be multi-platform, it would be interesting to me to see if they can figure out a way to create multiplayer clients on each console that allow them to play cross-platform.
Yeah. That's...
I doubt it'll happen, but if anybody explores it, I would say Bungie would at least try.
Well, I mean, you look at what they've done with taking multiplayer statistics and stuff out of the closed console into the web. I mean, they're the ones to do it. I mean, they pioneered that stuff, and they really took it to the next level. And, you know, with screenshots and videos, and the stat tracking is just insane. And
you know, all the stat tracking in the world can't, you know, make two consoles talk to each other. So I guess we'll just have to see what they do. But I think the way they build their community, the way they treat their community as a whole would kind of, you know, lend itself to a philosophy of trying to get everyone to play with, you know, with one another. So I guess we'll see. I don't really want to give my dollars to Activision, but I really like the games Bungie makes, and I've, you know, been a fan of theirs since before Halo was a first-person shooter. And we'll see. I'm cautiously optimistic, to use an overused term. Speaking of Bungie and their multiplayer community, it seems a few people have decided that Halo 2 is not going to go away. They really just want to keep playing multiplayer over Xbox Live. And since Xbox Live merely acted as an arbiter for matchmaking in Halo 2, if you were connected before Live shut off, you stayed connected until everyone quit the game. And there's a group of players that are still playing Halo 2. And that's insane and totally awesome. And, you know, I'm waiting for someone to develop something like... Do you remember Warp Pipe for the GameCube?
Yeah, vaguely.
It was a way to play multiplayer over the internet rather than the system link.
Right, yeah. Well, there was one for Xbox as well before Live existed for Halo. I used to use on GameSpy. It was called... Oh, God, I can't remember the name of it. But there was one through GameSpy, and there used to be dedicated rooms set up on there. And
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe something like that will come back. I'm sure the Xbox is old enough that people have reverse-engineered the crap out of it. So I guess we'll see.
Indeed.
Ubisoft says there's not going to be a PS3 version of Splinter Cell Conviction. Surprising nobody except people who are adamant that there will be one. I don't care. Do you?
Well, no. I mean, I'm playing it on 360, but I mean, it does kind of suck for people that only own a PlayStation 3. It's I don't remember exactly what their excuse was, but I have a feeling that there was money exchanged in hands with Microsoft
in hat form.
Yeah.
Yeah, although Ubi was kind of vague about it. They said that Splinter Cell Conviction is exclusive to Xbox 360 and the PC version is coming out next week. That's all they really said about it, which doesn't really close the door on a PS3 version, but, you know.
It'll probably be announced at E3.
Yeah, don't hold your breath. Don't hold your breath. All right. Let's see. 26 plus 4 members of Infinity Ward have gone Oscar Mike, as they have left the studio for various other ventures. Maybe some went to Jason West and Vince Zampella's new Respawn studio with EA. Maybe some went to Sledgehammer. Maybe some jump ship to Treyarch. Who knows? All we know is that a good number of people and a good number of high-up people in Infinity Ward are no longer with Infinity Ward. So, yeah. I'm not really sure what we are going to see from them in the future, and I saw some rumblings from analysts that Activision might just shutter the studio.
Yeah.
So, that really sucks, and I feel for anybody losing their jobs, but, you know, it sounded like that was a time bomb waiting to explode, and, well, it seems to have happened. Anyway, we got some new gameplay details on Ghost Recon Future Soldier, and, you know, it's all near-future stuff, kind of like Graw, but, it looks a little more sci-fi, and Nick, have you gone over this?
Yeah, I mean, I watched the trailer and I saw some of the gameplay details. It looks like you're going to have a little more direct control over some of like the drones and stuff. And there's an interesting feature where like you can tag yourself to like the squad leader, and then like you'll just move in formation and you can worry about covering. So like squad leader will like worry about movement and where you're going to go, and then you just have to worry about where you're aiming and stuff like that. So potentially that's like good news for a little bit more casual people, you know, maybe for couch co-op. I don't, you know, they haven't said details yet, but something like that to, you know, someone that doesn't have the coordination or is not used to aiming and moving with console shooters. I know a lot of times, like, you know, I've tried to get my wife to play Halo and stuff like that, and that's the biggest problem she usually has is aiming and moving at the same time. So potentially, it sounds interesting. The live action video trailer for it looks really slick. So we'll see.
We will see indeed. And last but not least, wow, this is a really Halo-centric news section.
I think because of the beta and the Bungie news, it's kind of hard not to be.
That's true. But your cat is going to be really disappointed with the Halo Reach Legendary Edition, as it does not include more armor for them to suit up in and go out and face the world. But it does have a Todd McFarlane sculpted statue of Noble Squad.
Yeah, and it looks really nice.
Looks pretty neat, and the box looks pretty neat, and yeah, the Legendary Edition of Halo 3, which I own, it was pretty nice. I really enjoyed the documentaries and stuff. And, you know, I really dig on stuff like that. Studios that do that type of thing well. Bungie is one. Sony Santa Monica has done some really good documentaries with God of War. But I really like, you know, it looks cool, and McFarlane toys are all pretty, you know, well sculpted, so it's pretty neat. Unfortunately, the price is not. It is still $150, so I would wait until the Legendary Edition goes on sale at Best Buy, inevitably 3 months later. Yeah. I remember seeing a giant stack of Legendary Edition Halo 3s going for $39.99.
Yeah, you can still get it for that price on Amazon and stuff now. And so they will, you know, they always say it's limited or whatever, but they always have more.
Oh yeah, they always have more. But it, you know, it's coming in 3 versions, same as Halo 3. There's a standard edition for $60. There is a limited edition for $80 with a special case and armor set for multiplayer and some story-related goodie bag, which I don't care about. And Legendary Edition is all of the above, plus the statue, plus a UNSC-themed custom package, and an exclusive multiplayer Spartan armor effect. Congratulations, you will be able to advertise that you dropped $150 on a game. Everyone will know, and you can either feel better about it, or wear it like a badge of shame. I don't know. You know, most people are quick to point out people that spend a lot of money, like the $25 horse in World of Warcraft, which I actually own. But it's kind of funny to see people like, oh my god, you paid $25 for a horse in World of Warcraft, or you paid $150 for some armor in Halo. What are you, some kind of idiot? And, you know, maybe, but idiots have disposable income, and I think that's what Bungie is banking on with this package. So we got a couple quick stories here. The new Steam update, sexy as it is, has been released, and the Mac version was dated originally as coming out in April, but they missed it, and Valve Time says May 12th is part of April. So, if you've got a Mac, you can check out some of the Source Engine stuff and hopefully a few surprises when that version comes out. Another Halo story. ODST got a price drop to $29.99 since it is going to be your key to play Halo Reach's multiplayer beta if you were not able to score code in any other fashion. So, you know, pay $30 for a beta. Seems to be a popular thing these days. I mean, if you pre-order StarCraft, you get a beta key. I'm not so sure how I feel about paying for a beta, but whatever funds development, I guess. last but not least, the MechWarrior 4 free release has finally cleared legal limbo, and you can download it from MechTech?
Yeah, or you can try. I tried all day yesterday, off and on, and the site has just been down.
Probably been hammered by everyone wanting to relive the glory days of MechWarrior 4.
Yeah.
By which I mean the glory days of MechWarrior 2, of course. Anyway, that's really it for news, but one news story did pop up, and it kind of irked pretty much every member of the staff in their own special way. And let's see. Ben Griffiths of Platform Nation posed a question. He said, is co-op a fad with an inevitable expiration date? And he says, right now, cooperative play is enjoying a certain flavor of the month, boo, status, and developers are falling over themselves to include it in their games, even to the extent, in some cases, that it takes priority over single-player gameplay in terms of design theory and development time. Not too many complaints have been heard just yet, but is it possible that co-op might soon go the way of previous fads, like Cover Your Ears, Kids, the dreaded QTE. And I'm going to say, Ben Griffiths of Platform Nation, you are an idiot. Co-op is not going away because co-op has existed in video games pretty much since the beginning. It is not a fad. It is enjoying a bit of a renaissance at the moment, where, you know, as we have discussed through the entire history of Co-Optimus, that the, you know, the advent of HDTVs and always-on, always-connected consoles has allowed for new and better ways for people to connect and play together. And you're seeing a lot more titles with it these days because, frankly, they can, and it does help sell copies. People have always said that co-op is more fun than single-player if it's done well, and a lot of people are trying. So, you know, I do not think it's a fad. I don't think it's ever going to go away. If anything goes away, we're going to see less single-player games, or less straight single-player games in a lot of genres.
Yeah, I mean, I think the bottom line is co-op games, or any kind of multiplayer game, has a lot more has a lot longer legs and a lot longer shelf life than any single-player game ever will. Right, those games just seem to hang around for, you know, months and months and years, and it's not like games like Halo 2. I mean, was it 6 years later, and they're still going at it. Granted, it's not co-op, but it's a form of multiplayer that's going on. So, and yeah, to say it's a fad is kind of silly, because like you pointed out, it's been going on since, I think that the earliest one we got in our database is 1978 or something like that.
Yeah, and how many NES and, you know, Genesis and Super Nintendo games had two-player modes?
Yeah.
You know? A lot of them.
I would say that was probably the first co-op renaissance, that those games there were the side-scroller games where you had a lot of co-op. And yeah, it did go away for a bit. Maybe people got a little tired of it, and we didn't see as much of it. But now, you know, like you said, now it came back in a big way. And
I think a better question would be, are, you know, survival or horde mode type modes a fad? And I'd say yes. You know, it's a good game type, but, you know, it did get popular, and a bunch of people started including it, often as DLC or a last-minute add-on to the game. So I think but it's been honed and kind of turned into its own game type. So, you know, is that the flavor of the month? Sure, I will agree that things like that are. But, you know, as soon as someone comes up with a new type of co-op, it will. But the fact of the matter is, co-op is never going to go away. I mean, you look at, you know, half the stuff on the iPhone, like Facebook games, like these are all social and cooperative, not versus, like, you're not competing with other farmers in Farmville. You're working with other players to trade knickknacks.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing the future of gaming, and the future of gaming is social and cooperative. And there will always be competitive games, and there will always be single-player games, but I think that for most people, cooperative is the way to go. And by your silence, I believe you agree with me.
Yeah, there's not much more to say.
Yes. So anyway, let's start wrapping things up. We've been talking for quite some time. We've got some upcoming co-op releases. On the 11th of May, yes, the 11th of May, we have Skate 3 for 360 and PS3, and I believe Lost Planet 2.
Yeah, that sounds...
Sounds about right?
Yeah, it sounds about right.
For the 360 and PS3, I believe we're going to have some more upcoming coverage on Skate 3. I think Jason's heading out to the developers again. On May 13th, on PSN, we have Soldner X2 Final Prototype, which will hopefully be more playable than Soldner X, which was very pretty, but the fact that I couldn't figure out how to play it after 3 hours was kind of telling. It's really complex. You're more powerful for not shooting, but you need to always be shooting.
Okay. And
yeah, it's kind of a weird game. And on May 18th, we have Red Dead Redemption for the 360 and PS3, and Attack of the Movies 3D for the Wii and 360. So some big games in there, but overall kind of light. Huh. And didn't Xenoclash Ultimate Edition get bumped to this coming week?
Yeah, we actually didn't update that date. That got moved, I think it's May 5th. So.
Yeah, so Xenoclash is coming out this coming week, and it looks fun, so hopefully I will play that. On the site, we had a bunch of reviews. We posted our Beyond Co-op reviews for the month of April, with Final Fantasy XIII, Deadly Premonition, Greed Corp, Section 8, God of War 3, Shin Megami Tensei Strange Journey, Metro 2033, and Beat Hazard. So check those out. The Scourge Project got a surprisingly awful review from our boy Nick here. And Splinter Cell Conviction. So read them, check them out, and if you agree or disagree, let us know in the comments, because we like to know that people actually read our stuff. There were a bunch of features that we posted. We had an interview with Naughty Dog for Uncharted 2 about the upcoming co-op Siege mode. A developer interview with for Blacklight Tango Down. Kat posted the new On the Download Episode 8 Cheap and Indie. New co-op classics for R-Type. Co-op Casual Friday for Castle Panic. And One for All and All for Me, an achievement journey, which will warm your heart or raise your cackles. I'm not sure. I don't know how people react to some of these things. Anyway, that just about does it for us. So please leave your feedback on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at Co-Optimus without the dash. And that's about it. You got anything else to say, Nick?
I don't think so. I think we had a pretty interesting episode. One thing I guess we can note is the site is now covering iPhone, iPad, iPod games.
That is true. We are.
We expanded that area, and I think there's 5 games in it right now, but as soon as we find some more, then we'll be adding them. So.
I know a few of us have iPhones, but if anyone is willing to send us an iPad for review purposes, I would gladly accept one, because I can't afford it right now.
No.
And I wouldn't buy the first one. But that's a topic for a completely different podcast. So for Nick, I'm Mike. This is the Co-Opticast, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
Bye-bye.